Item on our agenda tonight is Wayne Kosky telling us his response to questions regarding the radar and approach tests purportedly taken on 9/11 at the Pentagon. So, Wayne, the floor is yours. Go ahead.
All right. Well, thanks. I'm going to try to go through this pretty quickly. Keep it within 15 minutes. Included in the agenda was a draft PowerPoint that you could download. You can go to, if you didn't get to it, you can go to hopeoutloud.org, www.hopeoutloud.org/Pentagon, and it'll be the top item there. So the purpose of this presentation was to review the flight path near the impact area. So that because there were some questions raised about in previous presentations saying how things didn't quite line up. And so I needed to go take a look at this because it was criticized as being inaccurate. The paths were shown. Previous presentations were not perfectly in sync with each other. So I had to take the time to go back and account for the flight left bank that was described in many witnesses and make everything kind of align. So I've done that. So in this presentation, I'll be describing the entire approach path from some miles out. We'll be looking at the radar approaching the Arlington area, include the spiral descent, the impossibility of the north of Sitco aberration, how do you make that little dance at the end if it did go north of Sitco, and how it aligns with the shadow captured in the Sitco video, the notched tree near Washington Boulevard, Lloyd England streetlights, and the final segment impacting the trailer and retaining walls. So moving on to slide, I guess five now. Multiple radar tracking stations corroborated a flight path towards the Pentagon. There's a tight right bank that continued until a place called About Bailey's Crossing, routes 7 and 244, and some can go on mute over there. Sounds like dishes. About 5 miles from the Pentagon, the Dulles flight controllers thought it was a military plane due to the 14,000-foot radius at a turn at 350 miles an hour, not something they've seen typically. They thought it was a military. And then it was followed by a slight left bank for the final 2 miles. The plane approach was seen by witnesses, and it was identified as being south of the Sheridan Hotel, north of the Virginia Department of Transportation Tower, and traveling along Columbia Pike. The place was low, and in this area, as reported by Edward Paik, Terry Morin, who was CIT with interviewees, Don Vignola, Tim Timmerman, Steve Storty, who were in Pentagon City, and Deb Onloff, who was in the Sheridan and saw it go by her. Slide 7, witnesses near the Pentagon talk of a left bank or left wing down. The path shown reflects this right bank, big circle, followed by a slight left bank as it approaches the actual Pentagon. Frequently quoted north of Sitco path is shown for comparison. It requires effectively a 2,000-foot radius turn at 500 miles an hour, which would create 9 or 10 G-forces if it were to go zooming quick to the left over the Navy Annex to the right past to the north of the Sitco and crashing in the building or doing anything. Slide 8 is just a review of the data that I got for the Pentagon. The slide 9 shows how this was plotted on Google Maps. You can see that there's a fair amount of diversity. There isn't quite a straight path through all this. There's many different dots, but it shows the route. That's slide 9. Slide 10 zooms in. We also point out a place called 1400 South Barton, which is where Tom Trapezio's he was sitting on his deck when the plane flew over him at treetop level or 300 feet. It turns out it was probably more like 600 feet, but who can tell distances that quickly. So slide 11 kind of zooms in. It shows where the final couple of miles. And you can see where 1400 South Barton is. The flight path goes just about above it. And slide 12. Actually, it's kind of repeated, it looks like. Slide 13. Oh, yeah, slide 12 and 13 are a pair because they are scaled to be the same. Slide 13 is from the flight data recorder. I typically don't use the flight data recorder because there's no one on this call that's going to believe anything that the flight data recorder is, so I've just included it here because it is consistent with the other data that we've seen. And it records in the area of Tom Trapezio's house an altitude of 786 feet, and he's at 200, so it's about 600 feet above his house. Slide 14 just basically shows what a straight line would look like. There's a slight left bank in the flight data recorder. It's not as strong as I actually drew, but that's what it is. Slide 15 shows the same radar approach, and at the very end it shows a 2,000-foot little diversion there around the Sitco station, which would create a 9-G-force acceleration. Slide 16 is the same thing, just in some more detail. Next, a bunch of slides I'm not really going to go through very much. They do talk about the number of witnesses, talking about how the left wing was down. We've got Albert Hemphill. We've got Marianne Owens on slide 19, Jack Singleton, who may or may not have actually been a witness, but this is what he was told. Slide 21 is Steve Sorti. 22 is Steve Anderson. Madeline Zackheim, who was on Columbia Pike, effectively near the VDOT tower, and her account placed the plane within inches of the roof of a small building with the left wing tilted down. So we have Penny Inglis. So there's witnesses there that talk about a slight left bank. In slide 26, we get into the last mile. I've drawn it as close to scale as I can, putting the plane passing where the CIT witnesses and others that said that the plane had gone by. I want to point out the Sitco station, which is in red, and the tree with a notch, which is a green arrow, a green circle. We're going to see that in a few moments. Slide 27 is the tree that's going to that has a notch in it. This is 2009, so it's had 8 years to grow out. But we'll see the pictures of the day. Slide 28 is the light pole for the light pole number two, which we'll touch on. Going back to slide 29, kind of zoomed into the last half mile. We're going to take a closer look at this slide. So we're going to go and look at the security camera. The released videos had a couple that were related to the Pentagon, the two security cameras. We had the DoubleTree and the Sitco security camera. Slide 32 is the location of the Sitco in relationship to the crashed-in wall. Slide 33 shows where the Sitco camera, where the shadow would have been for the plane that as it passed the Sitco station along this exact same path. And I've tried to use the exact same drawing in all these pictures here, so the resolution gets worse as you get zoomed in a little bit. So shows the direction of the sunlight and the field of view. Slide 34 and 35 are, if you look at them, you'll see the shadow. And then in slide 35, the shadow is gone. The white space in the middle, as I've shown in previous presentations, is caused by some low shrubbery that was there. You can see that in that kind of that first overview of the Pentagon there. The tree notch on slide 37, there's a tree just before the first light pole number one that had a notch that was clearly identifiable. It defines the location of the right engine. It's consistent with the street lamp damage, and the phone will show stripped and cut branches. Slide 38 is an overview, a Jason Ingersoll photo, I believe, showing a tree notch. We're going to kind of zoom in on it on slide 39. You can see it's kind of got this kind of like rounded shape, and it's got some little white images that are kind of white boundary at the top. And as we'll see in the next couple of slides, that's stripped bark from trees. So what would have done that? Something going by very fast. Slide 40 is showing another picture of the same tree. Slide 41 is kind of a zoom in, and you can see that the tree was sheared and the branches were actually roughly cut. So to show you what it looks like, to prove that this was in fact a 9/11 event, so we have slide 42, which is a picture taken from the CITGO station. Slide 43 zooms in on that particular tree, and you can see it's kind of flat-topped, maybe even a little bit of rounded like the other pictures showed. Slide 44 is a picture taken on May 1st, year 2000, 13 or 14 months earlier. And you can see the tree in the background, and if you zoom in, you can see it's not, slide 45 shows it's not flat. It's still kind of bushy at the top. So it doesn't have a same shape, and the other ones would have the characteristics of the top having been sheared off by something going by. Jonathan Cole had noted that the speed of his brush hog that cuts tree brush is probably rotating at about 150 miles an hour when it cuts the trees and with the brush hog. Slide 47, we're going to touch on Lloyd's taxicab. I've gone through this in a previous presentation. I don't need to go through it too much here. Slide 48 shows the different pieces of the poles, the mast pole, the lamp, the lower arm. Slide 49 shows where those are in conjunction with the tree with the notch. It's got lamp post number one and lamp post two. Slide 50 shows the location of the large mast and some of the other pieces. Mast 2 was in the previous diagram 49 was not fully impacted. It was knocked, and of course, as you saw, as you recall, it was not severed like lamp post number 1 was. It was in fact bent and knocked to the side, but not severed. So something much less massive or powerful or rigid hit it. So it looked like it was the wingtip of the left wing. Slide 51 kind of zooms in on those parts. Slide 52 shows where the parts are. Slide 53 shows lamp post number 2 laying as it's been bent, but not severed. The north end of the Pentagon terminus of the flight path begins on slide 55, highlights the retaining wall, the diesel generator, and the tree at column 16. Slide 56 is something you've seen before. It shows the plane approaching the retaining wall and the diesel generator. 57 shows where the impact with the diesel generator would have been. 58 shows the impact with the retaining wall. Slide 59 shows the retaining wall that has been damaged and exactly the right number of feet apart. On slide 60, you see the diesel generator trailer has been kind of bashed in and rotated and moved forward. So the conclusion is that the flight path from radar to the Pentagon is consistent with the observed data. The radar is consistent with Trapezio's observation. Location between the Sheridan and VDOT is confirmed. The shadow on the CITGO security camera is consistent. The tree notch confirms the right engine location. The severed lamp post number 1 means the impact by the wing spar. The bent lamp post number 2 verifies it was hit by the extremity of the left wing. The impact of the diesel generator indicates the location of the right engine as it approaches the building. And the impacted retaining wall indicates the location of the left engine. The slight bank, left bank to the left in the final 2 miles has been ignored when the discussing the final approach and ignoring the left bank leads to misunderstandings, and including the left bank puts it all into focus. So, and that's what I have. There's an appendix that goes through Lagasse's who's the basis for the Bet My Life left turn over the Citgo station, and I have to point out that Robert Tercio stands out and points in the opposite direction, and you know,
okay,
it's not me saying it's okay.
Yeah, well,
okay, I'm done.
We're out of time. Okay.
Okay. Very good.
Thank you so much for your keeping it to roughly 15 minutes. And since this was a response to Craig, I think it's only fair to allow Craig to speak first, but we will go into Q&A mode. So if you want to make a comment or ask a question regarding what you've just heard, once we go into Q&A mode, you will be able to do so by pressing star 6. It should put you in the queue, okay? But, Craig, I assume you're not muted, so you...
Yeah, I'm unmuted now, yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
So did you want me to go ahead?
Yes, please.
Okay. Yeah, first of all, I do want to make one point that this presentation is much more than an answering of questions I raised in October. It's just the beginning of the presentation addresses the issue of the flight path, and the all the rest of it really was had nothing to do with questions from me. So I just wanted to be clear about the fact that this most of the presentation has nothing to do with my questions. In fact, a fair amount of it is stuff that we have already heard about before. I do want to say that I think I'm glad to at least see that Wayne has acknowledged that the flight path that he presented to us in October is wrong and that he has changed that. And I gather that what he's really saying is that any flight path, I mean, this is a completely different flight path than what we've seen before. So I gather that the ones that we've seen in past presentations are no longer applicable. Now, what I found about the flight path in October, the reason I objected to it immediately, first of all, it went right over the Navy Annex, which was completely incompatible with the damage, and completely different from the official path. What I couldn't figure out after that was how you were going to manage to correct the flight path so that it achieved what you are seem to be seeking to try and achieve, which is to put the flight path north of the VDOT tower so that it can go lower and yet still line up with the damage. The only way I could see is if you had the plane changing direction to some degree. And in fact, that's exactly what you ended up doing. You moved the flight path a bit more south, and you made the flight path more curved, so that it can be south of the Navy Annex for most of the way and still kind of you reinforce this left bank thing to sort of account for the fact that when it's going alongside the Navy Annex, it doesn't line up with the damage either. So I want to get into, you have a number of witnesses that you just kind of touch on very quickly to the idea of the left wing dipping. One of those people said that the left wing was drug along the ground, to quote him. That's Steve Anderson from USA Today. So clearly he was wrong about that. Marianne Owens, you quote, and she says the left wing scraped along the helipad, and clearly she's wrong about that as well, because it obviously didn't. You bring back Steve Storti, which is kind of astounding to me, because he was three quarters of a mile away from the Pentagon, and he actually claimed that he could see people moving around inside the plane from that distance. And yet and he also mentions that the plane veered sharply at one point, which is not really consistent with anything. So I'm not sure why you would rely on him to report a a slight dip in the left wing from three-quarters of a mile away. And Albert Hemphill, who was the subject of a recent article by David Chandler, clearly puts the plane right over the Navy Annex, which is north of the path required to account for the damage. So I'm not really sure. I don't think these witnesses are very strong for you at all. And I want to talk about the William legacy really quick. I don't want to go on too long because other people want to ask. But in National Security Alert, which is the interview that is on camera that everybody can look at and they can hear the questions, they can watch how he answers those questions, he clearly points north of the gas station. He points to exactly where he saw the plane, and he describes it, and then he draws it on an aerial photograph. And there's absolutely no question that he's putting the plane north of the gas station. And then you mentioned Robert Tercios as pointing in the opposite direction. I don't know what you're talking about here, because you've got a still of him pointing, but I couldn't even find that still in National Security Alert. But I mean, obviously it's a real image, but what he's describing there is the plane going over the north corner of the canopy of the gas station. And he's pointing at the canopy, but he says that the right wing went over the northernmost part of the canopy. So he's not disagreeing with Lagasse. He's not fundamentally contradicting Lagasse, as you suggest. In fact, he doesn't put the plane as far north as Lagasse does, but he still puts it north of the official path and north of the Citgo gas station. So anyway, I'm not sure I'm going to I'm not sure I should go on too much longer. I should probably just stop there and just let you respond if you wish.
Okay. Well, thanks Craig for your comments. I think basically we're largely in agreement on a number of things here. I did, as you point out, have to realign the flight paths from my previous presentations to kind of get them all to kind of fit. I had to recognize that there was a slight left the bank that really kind of made everything come into focus. But the amounts that I had to shift the flight paths were on the order of maybe 10, 20 feet out around the Navy Annex type area. Nothing dramatic. So it's all consistent with what I presented before when I talked about Lloyd's taxicab, the Citgo shadow, and I've now added the additional detail of the notch in the tree with the various images. So the alignments were more to bring everything into focus than a changing a direction. So, the path that is now presented, which is consistent, does align with the damage, and it hits the right engine, hits the notch of the tree, the right engine hits the diesel generator, the light pole hits to the right of the right engine, the left wing hits to the, or bashes, or nicks the light pole number two. So everything kind of lines up. The reason that I've used all these witnesses is they all say left bank. I haven't found a witness that says right bank. So the preponderance of all the people saying left bank seems to be a consensus that the plane was, if it's doing anything at all besides going flat, it was banking to the left. And that makes everything kind of work. I guess the last thing about the Lagasse is, while it's in the appendix, the picture is either from National Security Alert or the Pentagon. I think it's the Pentagon, actually. So you might want to look there. But Tercio's pointing over the roof of the Citgo, the canopy of the Citgo station. But Lagasse put the plane 300 feet behind him along the wall. That's where he put it. So he would have had to be turning around, pointing in the opposite direction. So I think I'm pretty sure it's the Pentagon. You can go look there and see Tercio. Since Lagasse bet his life, Tercio's putting the bullet between his eyes. So I think, I think I've covered most of the points here. So you can ask again, or we can go to the next questioner. Thanks. Over.
Well, a couple of points. I'm not sure what, you know, I haven't looked at Pentagon as opposed to National Security Alert to find this image of him pointing, but I don't really think it matters whether we can get a still image of him pointing. I think what matters is, what is he saying? What is the story that he's describing? And he's very clear about what he's describing, and that is that the plane, the right wing of the plane, went over the left, the north corner of the canopy of the station. That's, he says that very clearly, and throughout the whole interview, he's pointing to the north to describe where the plane went. And he even says that it lifted up before it went over the do not enter sign that's over the highway. So he described that as well. Now, Lagasse, you know, clearly he has it a little bit farther away, but how you can turn that around so that now the plane is completely behind him, how can you possibly justify that?
Well, I'll just let you take a review of the Pentagon video yourself, and the others here can review it themselves. Lagasse puts the plane over the stone wall at the Arlington National Cemetery, 300 feet behind where Patricio is pointing in the opposite direction. So clearly something's not right. And the entire reason for doing this was to show that the plane couldn't get out as far as the Arlington Cemetery wall, because it would be creating a 200-foot tight turn at 500 miles an hour, creating the 9.7 Gs that the plane can't handle. That's the whole point for doing it. Even if it went over the Citgo station, you'd have a not quite so sharp or large G value, but it would be far too large, and the plane wouldn't be able to get back over the Pentagon if it did was having but, coming in that direction. So that's the whole point. Okay, go ahead.
I was just going to say, nobody is suggesting that the plane flew south of the Navy Annex and then did a sudden swerve to go north of the gas station and then turned bank right to go into the Pentagon. I mean, nobody's saying that. So your G-force thing is, you're assuming that you're trying to put together the north of Citgo witnesses with the radar data and saying, well, that can't work. Therefore, the north of Citgo witnesses are wrong. But I mean, what you're implying here about Tercio saying that, you know, something's wrong here because he's where he's pointing. I mean, if you don't even know what it was he was saying when he was pointing, then that's kind of worthless, don't you think? They both put the plane north of the gas station. What could be clearer?
He was pointing above. Over there, and again, I invite you to go look at the video, and as well as
I don't think we're going to resolve this point tonight because apparently
but
it has to do with
Ken. There is one other point I have to make here. The other CIT witnesses put the plane on the south corner near the Sheridan of the Navy Annex, going over it in that direction, and to turn and hit the Pentagon as they say it did, unless you want to be one of the flyover, in which case it must have gone off some far away from the Pentagon. It would have had to make a 2,000-foot radius turn, which, as we've discussed when we talked about the pilot for 9/11 truth, it could, you can't have. That's what they say. You can't have a Boeing 757 doing a 2,000-foot radius turn, which is what
I think there's agreement on that. I think both of you agree that the north of Citgo cannot be justified according to the Pentagon damage. So let's drop that there and give others a chance to ask their questions or make their comments, okay? Because we have several people waiting in the queue, and we'll get to them really directly here. Okay, so the next one is Xander Arena. Try to make it fairly succinct, please, Xander. We have several people waiting. Go ahead.
Yep. Okay. Wayne, I appreciate this presentation. The tree information is new to me, and I would like to hear from you when you discovered this notch tree. And then I want to point out that the vector from the tree to the building, I'm looking at slide 40, doesn't really appear to reconcile the other stuff that's going on behind the heliport. And I wanted to ask if you, and I still don't see evidence of a 757 in the building, so I'm wondering if you might have some other notion of a different form of aircraft that might have additionally taken us out of Sitgo approach. I don't think that the 2,000-foot radius turn is possible. I think this kind of, you know, looking at this tree, man, I'm intrigued. I think that maybe we do have two vehicles in the area, two aircraft. One flying over, one impacting. I don't know. I'm willing to give you that. And I just wanted to hear if you have any thoughts of an additional style or form of aircraft that might have done this, and that's all I got.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks, Alexander. First of all, I would direct you to slide 26, which is entitled The Last Mile the Plane Swept. It shows the plane going over the area south of the Sheridan, barely touching or flying over the Navy Annex, kind of in line with what Terry Moran said. And then you see the circle, which is where the tree is. And I from the image on slide 40, I think maybe you said, that showed the notch, this is where the tree actually is, and it's right along the flight path that goes is validated by the shadow, the notch, the Lloyd England light poles, the diesel generator trailer, and the retaining wall, and then hitting at column 14, or thereabouts. So everything is really kind of consistent here. I first became aware of this probably about 6 months ago.
Okay, well, we don't need to long in the around there. The answer, okay. The question was basically, you think another aircraft may have been involved, and, you know.
No, everything's perfectly consistent with a single plane flying in this direction.
Okay.
I see no evidence for anything else.
Yeah.
Over.
That's fair. Okay, so try to keep the answers that direct if you possibly can, and we'll go on to Barry Zwicker. Barry.
Yeah, I wonder if, Wayne, you've heard about Malcolm Gladwell's concept of one thin slice, which is basically that if there's one significant aspect of a story, the whole narrative fails. So in your presentation, there are many thin slices and indeed thick ones. For instance, Lloyd England's taxi story does not hold up whatsoever. No wreckage of a large transport category aircraft was ever found in or around the Pentagon. The whole of the Pentagon in no way matches a 757 regarding wings, giant engines, or rudder. The hole in the interior of the Pentagon could not have been made by the aluminum nose of any aircraft. Hanny Anger could not have piloted such a plane. You mentioned England, but otherwise you didn't mention these other things. So most of your presentation, I have to conclude, is noise. The noise of odd angels dancing on the head of a Pentagon pin. I think it was an exercise in obfuscation, and you've shown yourself immune to counterargument. I don't have a question. I'm just making that comment.
Well, thank you very much, Barry. But I think what that means is you haven't paid attention to the other presentations that I've made, in which I've gone over all the pieces for Lloyd England's light poles. All the pieces can be identified in photographs. The locations are where that are consistent with that. There are no thin slices, and if there's any thin slices, it's anything to do with a plane flyover, explosives only. We, of course, went through the wall in two different presentations. The wall was made of just steel tubes bolted together at the ceilings with 3/4-inch rods. That's all it was. So you've not paid attention to these others, and I invite you to go to the website hopeoutloud.org/Pentagon, where I've got the archive of these presentations.
So okay, if you just took Lloyd England, that's one thin slice right there.
I'm sorry, Wayne. I'm going to have to ask you to be a little more succinct in your responses, okay? Because we've got three more people that want to talk, and we've got three more presentations, okay? So let's move on, okay?
Thank you.
Peter Ketchum, you're next. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Hello, can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, so I have a really basic question. Am I allowed to ask a very basic question about the crash, or does it have to be about the flight path in particular?
the presentation was on the flight path tonight, okay, so it really should pertain to that to some degree. But if you have other questions, I'm sure Wayne would be happy to answer them if you email him. Okay?
I'll keep it down to 33 seconds. So what's your answer? What's your question, Peter?
Yeah, okay, this is possibly very naive because I haven't spent any time studying it. If a plane crashed, where is the wreckage from the plane? Where are the dead bodies? Where's the luggage? That's the
inside.
Question.
The answer is real simple. It's inside the building. The misconception that people have is that there's a concrete brick reinforced castle style wall. In fact, it was just steel tubes holding up windows with infill.
Yeah,
wait.
I think he's asking where's the evidence. He's asking where's the evidence of it. I believe. Okay. Where's the proof that it was inside the building? Okay.
Well, that's a much bigger lift, and I'm not going to answer that in 30 seconds even. So I haven't developed it. I haven't gone through that. I'd have to go make a presentation talking about the interior of the buildings and what's mm-hmm. found, and it's a whole lot harder.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Another
fair
time.
Enough. Okay, so okay, yeah, we don't really have enough time for that question. Thank you. Okay, so all right. Barbara, please keep it succinct and pertinent to the flight path. Go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry. Why didn't that work? Barbara Honegger. You're up. Okay, go ahead.
Can you hear me okay now?
Yes.
Oh, good. Thank you very much. Okay. First off, I hadn't heard it when I was preparing my comment, but I appreciate Xander keeping open the very serious possibility that there were two planes. That's the whole message of Behind the Smoke Curtain, which I hope that Peter Ketchum watches on YouTube. And I have an email to everybody on the 9/11 teleconference call. I've made a major discovery, and that is that two of the very critical Citizens Investigation Team witnesses, CIT witnesses, William Middleton and Sean Boger. Sean Boger was in the air traffic controller tower on top of the heliport firehouse, significantly to the left or north of even the helipad. So we're talking 200 feet further to the left or north from the alleged impact point by the official story. Both Sean Boger and William Middleton explicitly in words place the final approach of the plane, which is what really matters, just before the wall at what they call the old firehouse. And I've just sent you a photograph from 8,000 of the old firehouse, and you will see that the air traffic controller tower on top of the old firehouse, which had been destroyed and removed before 9/11, is effectively just off the wall opposite the center of the H of the helipad. You're talking at least 100 feet further to the left or north, just beyond the helipad, where all that plane debris that's like confetti and some, quite a few middle-sized pieces and some large pieces, that's where all those pieces are. So we're talking about at least 100 feet, at least 100 to 120 feet after north along the wall from the alleged impact point at column 14 that Wayne supports. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Barbara.
Well, thanks, Barbara. I'll point out that Sean Boger actually says he, in his Center for Military History, says, and I'm watching the plane go all the way into the building. So once it went into the building, it exploded. And once it exploded, I hit the floor and covered my head. So, you know, the location of the old tower is relatively consistent with any of this discussion, because it was
no, it's not. No, area. It's at least 100 to 120 feet further to the left or north, and there are legion other reasons for knowing, not just believing, that there was an early plane that was destroyed somehow before hitting the wall, that appeared to hit the wall from certain vantage points, right. Both vantage points, at 9:32 and 30 seconds, over 5 minutes before Flight 77. Or whatever plane came in at the path that you're describing, Wayne, even got close to Washington, D.C.
Okay, thanks. Next question.
Yep. Thank you, Barbara. And lastly, Frank Tolocco. Go ahead, Frank. Please keep it brief.
Frank here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, hi, Frank.
Frank.
Okay, how you doing? I have a statement here. I've been following these discussions, for the past year or more with more or less taking things in rather than adding to it. I'm referring everybody here to slide 26, which has the Sheraton, the Navy Annex, and Citgo Station. I don't know, whoever has it, call it up, because then it'll refer to what I'm saying. What I did was, and many people will remember that the 10th anniversary, the Washington, D.C. group, along with some of us from the Northeast, put on a weekend conference there about 9/11, and it was great that we're overlooking the Pentagon. But what was interesting, I went back to my notes, and what happened is when we were checking in, and Cheryl was there, on Friday evening, a couple of the younger people there, and they were in their 30s, were asking what we were there for, and we explained it. He says, oh, yeah, we were here. There's a plane went over the Sheraton and, clipped some of the antennas off. We don't know where the heck the plane went, but that's what everybody was saying, that it had come right over the Sheraton, which is to the north of where this suggested flight path is. Now, this is hearsay because I never got their names, et cetera, and you just have to trust that that's in fact what they said. But if in fact true, that would indicate that it was to the north of the Citgo Station, and it wasn't as described here on slide 26.
Okay.
So, okay, Frank, thanks. I was there, too, and I heard the same stories. I asked for the videos. I asked for more information, and no one gave me any. So, looking at all the damage path, looking at all the witnesses that have made statements, some of which have been recorded by the CIT, the plane went to the south of the Sheraton Station, north of the VDOT Towers, along the Navy Annex, clipped the notch in the tree, left a shadow, caught in the security camera at the Citgo, hit the light poles, hit the diesel generator trailer, hit the retaining wall, all in a straight line, aligns roughly adequately with the radar paths. So, you know, hearsay is a great place to begin asking questions, but it doesn't seem to hold up in light of all this other material that puts a single plane going down this path, hitting this stuff, leaving this trail of witnesses, and going into the Pentagon. So that's all, I guess.
All right. Thank you, Wayne. Thank you, Frank. And so now we are done with this particular issue for today, and we will move on to our second agenda item.